And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
I'm just trying to nail this intro down. How about you?
I'm just trying to screw it up, brother.
Well, I'm in good spirits today. I started my Tuesday morning off with a fresh weather tip for the Missouri-Georgia game, and I'm feeling quite confident about that one.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Well, you put that weekly weather note out there. Josh Barnhart, one of our patrons, got on and said, it's not going to rain in Columbia on Saturday, but it will be high of 74 with 9 miles per hour wind. So basically a perfect fall Saturday for football. Don't get sucked in again.
Now, keep in mind that the tweet I'm referencing says it's going to rain. So I don't know. These meteorologists, man, they're full of it. Right? One's telling me one thing, the one's telling me the other. I don't know, but I got fired up just reading that one.
Absolutely, man. It's probably going to be a beautiful day. I mean, they're saying it's around 70, so, I mean, I'm ready. I'm looking at my 10-day forecast, and I finally saw some temperatures that we're not going to get to the 80s, so I'm pumped up that fall is finally here, brother.
Well, speaking of fall, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but the 2019 SEC schedule was released by the conference on Tuesday, so I just want to give a, you know, thoughts on that. Anything jump out to you immediately? I wrote a couple articles about it on Saturday Down South, but did anything jump out to you on the 2019 football schedules?
Well, honestly, I just looked at the one. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sound like a homer, but it was obviously just Tennessee's.
Right.
Did anything jump out to you?
Well, here's a couple interesting notes. So their next season, it's a 2 bye week schedule for every team. So I really like that. Obviously, 1 bye week is the norm. They've shifted to 2, and I think that's due to the calendar and just the basically the length of the schedule. So it's a 14-week SEC schedule, and obviously they only play 12 regular season games. So that leaves 2 bye weeks for everybody. And I really like that. I like it on a number of reasons. We see with like the South Carolina game getting canceled. If South Carolina had 2 bye weeks, it would be much more flexible to squeeze a game in somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's it, not even touching, player safety. There was a couple years ago. Fortunately, it doesn't look like there's anyone doing it this year. But I remember, I think it was last season, Arkansas had a bye week, week 3. So that means they had 10 consecutive games. And I just don't think that's right to do in the name of player safety. I'm a big advocate for these guys getting a break. So I like the 2-week bye week system. And
yeah.
In addition to that, Georgia, they face 5 SEC opponents coming off a bye in 2019. So that's something to watch. A lot of teams getting rest to play Georgia. Do you think that's a competitive disadvantage for the Bulldogs?
Oh, definitely. I mean, when you got 2 weeks to prepare for Georgia, I mean, how can it not be? Now, on the flip side of the coin, there's a lot of times you could take advantage of them being on a bye. Maybe they're just not as game ready. But I would think if I was weighing apples and oranges here, I would probably have to say, yeah, if you got 2 weeks to prepare for Georgia, that's a favor for the opposing team. Let me ask you, because I'm looking at your article now, when they add this bye week, what is being taken away? Is the games going to start earlier in the season? Or are they going to extend later in the season? Is there going to be a change with the SEC championship game, anything like that? I mean, how are they working these byes in?
Yeah, I think the schedule is extended slightly. So, for example, the 2018 and the 2017 seasons, in 2017, the regular season ended November 25th. This season, it ends November 24th. And it looks like on the 2019 schedule, the regular season ends November 30th. So I think that was the only way to get it done. I think it's smart because you don't want to start necessarily earlier because it's so damn hot out. So extending it there into the late fall, early winter, I think that's basically the only move you can make there.
Okay, I like it. I think two buys is great. That allows families to have more weddings, so that's fucking awesome. So if you can't coordinate your wedding with two buys, then you need to not get married in the fall.
And I also touched on, you know, this is all just kind of guesswork because we obviously don't know a ton of the rosters, and even some of the coaches can be changed for the 2019 season. But I was asked to make a list of the five toughest 2019 schedules, and I picked Auburn as the toughest, and the reason it being they open with Oregon, which I think could be a really good team. That is on a neutral field though, so it's not at Oregon. Then Auburn later travels to Texas A&M, to Florida, to Arkansas, to LSU, and then of course they get Georgia and Alabama at home, and of course and Mississippi, you know, the entire West slate. So that's a pretty brutal stretch there for Auburn.
Yeah, man, that is brutal.
And then another team that really jumped out to me, Texas A&M. They have to go to Clemson, obviously, because they just hosted Clemson. And then in 2 weeks, they get Auburn. And then 2 weeks after that, they get Alabama. So that's just a brutal open. And they close South Carolina at home, at Georgia, at LSU. I expect A&M to have a big 2019 year. But looking at that schedule, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, yeah, that is going to be tough.
And then here, I think, is the toughest four-game stretch I found on the entire schedule. Mississippi State, they go at Auburn, at Tennessee, home for LSU, and then at Texas A&M. That's going to be incredibly tough for Mississippi State to come away with those four with even two wins, I would think.
Hell yeah. Is Mississippi State going to be at Tennessee? Or
it is at Tennessee, yes.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is a tough one. Because hopefully we'll be a lot better next year.
Yeah, that's also something we wanted to jump into because someone asked us, you know, how could Tennessee conceivably get to 8 wins with this 2019 schedule? So I'm going to break it down quickly for those who have not seen it. Tennessee opens the season with 3 home games. They host Georgia State in the opener, BYU, UT Chattanooga. Then they go on the road to Florida. Then they get a bye week. And then they come home for Georgia, Mississippi State, and then they go back on the road for Alabama. Then they're back home for South Carolina and UAB. Then they travel to Kentucky. Then they get that second bye week, and then they go at Missouri, home for Vanderbilt. I think that's a much easier slate than what they're looking at this year.
Yeah, that is because a lot of these teams aren't going to be as good next year. You know, you kind of already hit on Mississippi State. But Kentucky, Vanderbilt, they're not going to be near as good next year, I don't think.
Missouri will be losing Drew Locke.
Yeah, good point.
There's a chance South Carolina loses Jake Bentley, and Debo Samuel is already a senior. So, you know, there's going to be some attrition there. And I just think that, you know, I've been pretty hard on Tennessee, and it's not that I'm trying to bash them. I'm just trying to give my honest assessment here. But I don't think they're a very good team. But I think we've already begun to see that the youth movement has started in Knoxville. There's already a ton of young players playing. And I think as we, you know, progress, we'll see these players play better and better. I mean, we're already seeing guys like Bryce Thompson win SEC Freshman of the Week, and he's a true freshman. So I think by the end of this year, a lot of these guys, you know, you're not going to be, obviously can't call them freshmen anymore. And not only that, but they're going to be basically seasoned veterans. You add in another recruiting class that's basically a top 10 class. I think there's going to be a lot of young players playing next year for Tennessee, and a lot of those young players will be very experienced.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm for it. I think that we're moving in the right direction. We're not where we want to be by no means, but looking at the team and the youth on this team, I'm really excited about the future of this team. I am interested how we're going to do this year in conference play, just so we can kind of really see a gauge on the development. But it's funny, you tweeted out that schedule. One of our patrons, Seven Buckets 2, jumped on there and says, how can anyone possibly suggest 8 wins at this point? what in the world are you watching to make you think that? And it followed by another one, J.D. Dalton 04. He said, 15-0, baby.
And that's SEC fandom right there. Someone's really down on your team, and another fan's really high on them.
Yeah, so do you see 8 wins? I mean, it sounds to me like you do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the first three, I think you got to give Tennessee all those. Georgia State, BYU, UT Chattanooga. I don't even think they'll be tested any of those. You go to Florida. That's always a tough game. So let's give Tennessee a loss there. That'd be 3-1. Open date, return home for Georgia. That's probably a loss, but not a guarantee by any means. I don't think by next year. But we'll give them a loss there. So that would be 3-2. Mississippi State, I think that's a win. That's 4-2. Alabama, at Alabama, I would say that's a loss. That's 4-3. South Carolina, UAB, I think Tennessee can win both those games. That'd be 6. At Kentucky, 7. At Missouri, 8. Vanderbilt, 9. I think, without a doubt, 9 wins is possible, and that's
I like
counting
it.
Florida as a loss, which may not be at 2019.
Mike, I am drinking your Kool-Aid, brother. I am all for a 9-game win series. Yeah, I will take that.
Well, I mean, it's just incredibly hard to predict what's going to be happening in 2019. Like I said, we don't even know the rosters at this point. And
yeah.
By no means is this that tough of a schedule.
Well, let me ask you, talking about scheduling, you've talked about the toughest ones. Who are you looking at for the easiest schedule next year?
Well, we also did a roundup of some of the less challenging ones. And
let me guess, Alabama.
Number one on the list, Alabama. I'm just going to read you their home slate real quick, and you find a team on here that's going to test them. New Mexico State, Southern Miss, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Arkansas, LSU, Western Carolina, and that doesn't include Duke. They're playing at a neutral site.
Oh, my God. Out of that list, maybe LSU. But even then, they're going to be younger next year. I mean, they're losing a lot of people on defense, so I don't know. I mean, out of that list, Tennessee and LSU would be the toughest, too.
Yeah, I mean, they're just going to run through that, I would think.
Yeah.
And then another one is Florida, which you probably hate to see. But here's their home slate. UT Martin, Tennessee, Towson, Auburn, Vanderbilt, and Florida State, and that does not include – they play Miami, but they play it in Orlando.
Well, I could that's perfect. Yeah, so we got a struggling Florida State. I doubt they're going to be bounced back next year. We've got Auburn. I don't know about that situation. I mean, I still think they could – that has to be their toughest game. Them in Tennessee, but then again, it's early in the season. It's at the Swamp, and we know how that's worked out the last 25 years, so –
All right, Shane, so enough about the 2019. Let's jump back into, obviously, Week 4 action. One game we've yet to touch on this week. That's because the coaches didn't speak until Tuesday, but this is an intriguing matchup. South Carolina at Vanderbilt. Both those coaches spoke today, and you got to love Derek Mason here. He showed up in a gas station attendant uniform with his name on it and everything. Because why? Because he says Vanderbilt, South Carolina is going to be a street fight.
Tuesday, by God, it's working season.
I'll talk to our guys about it. You know, you come in at 5 a.m. And you get a chance to step into a meeting room. And I'm sure you're wondering why I have this shirt on, but it's Tuesday. It's a work day. You know, it's about being blue collar, man. So we step into a meeting at 5:55 and start talking about exactly what it is. And this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail, let's get to work.
You street fight, is that you wanting to make sure your guys are physical or cautioning them that the opponent plays that style?
Yeah, man, it's a combination of both, okay? We know who South Carolina is. South Carolina plays a physical style of ball. That's Coach Muschamp. That's his mentality. That's what it looks like for us. I mean, we know that we are a physical team as well, okay? We just have to be more consistent in what we do. And this is going to be a street fight because it's an SEC game. I don't see SEC games, not being physical. So with that being said, this isn't one of the sanctioned fights that are out there. This is a straight street fight. This is a backyard, no gloves. You throw a punch, I throw a punch. You hit me, I hit you. you know, for 4 quarters, 60 minutes every play.
So what do you think, Shane? Do you agree? Is this going to be a street fight in Nashville?
I really think it will be, man. I love this. This is Vandy football now. It's aggressive. It's angry. It's dirty. And I just like the mentality that he's trying to get these guys to buy in, and they have. Every game, even the Notre Dame game, they should have had. The team came to play. They gave their best. If you watch that game at the end, they were exhausted because they were given everything they had in that game. So he's created something over in Nashville, and I like it. And I love that shirt, man. I wish Tennessee would do something like that.
Well, and I think, my concern for Vanderbilt, because I agree with a lot of what you're saying, they could have easily won that game at Notre Dame. They had some mistakes here and there, and it really cost them. It was a one-score game, and they even had the ball at the end to win it, but they just couldn't get it done. Now, last year was kind of a similar thing. They started 3-0. They called out Alabama, lost 59-0, and then they went on to lose 7 consecutive SEC games. So they've got the fast starts down. They've proven that. Now they've got to sustain it, and it starts in South Carolina. And South Carolina is only a 2-point favorite, so a lot of people predicting a close, tight game here. But I think if Vanderbilt's going to win this game, they're going to need the support of their fan base. And that's something that Mason also talked about today. He really wants the fans to come out. So here's the Vanderbilt coach just kind of pleading with not only, everyone on campus, but the city of Nashville to show up and support the Commodores.
Man, it's everybody in this city, okay? We'll start with the fan base, okay? Or let's start with the student body, okay? To our 7,600, 7,800, like whatever it is, you need to come out and support this team, man, because it's you. You are Vanderbilt. They're Vanderbilt. And these students go into a classroom every day and compete against first-round draft picks, which are our student body. So, man, I get that. So come on out, support these dudes on Saturday, okay? And to our employees, which is around 22,000 here at Vanderbilt University, man, you need to come check out this football team, man, because it is Nashville, it is the SEC, and it is Vanderbilt, okay? They are you and you are them. Okay, this is who you serve, and they serve you. So come on out. Let's get some of this. Okay, man, we need you. Okay, we had a great contingency at Notre Dame. Man, that 5,000, 6,000, or 7,000, okay, at times sounded more than what Notre Dame had there. So I know we got it in us. And then, man, I talked to the city of Nashville. Okay, man, let's get this. Come on out there. Okay, man, this group, okay, is playing great football. And believe me, it's just like this city. Okay. We are Nashville. Nashville is our city. We need you to come on out and support, man. We're looking forward to it. 3 p.m. in the Dud. Let's get down.
All right, Shane. So what was your reaction when you saw old Mason, I don't want to say calling out the fans, but I think he was challenging everybody to show up for sure.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for him, man, because they actually do have a good ball team, and they got to convince their people at school. They got to convince the staff to come out. I mean, they live in a very popular city. You live out that way. I don't know how big the city is toward Vanderbilt football. I saw a lot of signs when I was out that way. It's just – it kind of sucks because they really do need help. And this was a – they were a laughing stock last year. Tennessee's even talked about checkering Vandy Stadium when they go out there just because the fans don't show up. Mm-hmm. So, I feel bad for the guy because – they do have a good team. They did get behind Franklin when he was down there, and this team just went toe-to-toe with the top 10 team in the country. Here he is the next week begging his fans to come out and support him.
On the other side of the coin, Will Muschamp, he met with the media today. He noted not a lot of injuries in this game. DJ Wonnum, who's already out, he's been out since the Georgia game, excuse me. He will continue to be out, but beyond that, no injuries. And this is a South Carolina team that, obviously they lost big the Georgia game, then they got their Marshall game canceled. So they're coming off a lot of rest. Do you think that will play any result on this Vanderbilt game with so much time off?
I think it could, man. I mean, to be honest with you, South Carolina had a lot of stuff going on. They had a lot of weather with the hurricane and not to mention the week before getting their ass beat by Georgia. This team has let down. You don't hear near as much from the fan base, so I can only imagine what the locker room's like over there. They're a little deflated because they got put in place. They thought they had a chance to beat the Georgia Bulldogs. Mm-hmm. So Now, what do? You sit at home for 2 weeks with your hands in your pockets. Does Muschamp champ get these guys fired up? Does he keep them motivated? Does he keep them ready, game shape ready? Because, like, you know, Mason's saying, this is going to be a dogfight. He's ready. He's ready to bring it. These boys have been in some tough, close games here at the end, and they're ready to compete. So are we going to see a letdown from South Carolina? It could happen. So,
yeah, and I think the spread kind of suggests that it might. I think that's kind of what they're thinking, because obviously you look at the SEC schedule. This is not specific to South Carolina, but every single team in the SEC, when you face a tough team the following week, the SEC likes to schedule a cupcake if possible. And I think that's obviously what they were doing there with facing Georgia and then coming back the next week with Marshall. That was kind of a get-right game. You want to get your confidence up immediately after a blowout like that. You know, whether these guys preach it that they just move on to the next day, whether you believe that or not. And then if you prepare and you prepare and you prepare and then you don't get to that game, then what do you got to reset? You still got the fresh on your mind of that ass whooping you took. So
that's right.
How long does that linger? They've not gotten it right. They're going to go up against an outstanding defense in Vanderbilt. This is a dangerous game. But speaking of the canceled game, Muschamp was asked about that. You know, what's the latest with that? As you know, we've noted on a previous podcast, they've got a month to decide this if they're going to fill, now they are the only ones in the SEC technically with a second bye because they had to cancel that Marshall game. Mm-hmm. So here's Muschamp on the thought process in Columbia right now on what they're going to do with that October 20th game.
We've had numerous discussions, Coach Tanner and myself, about the 20th. Obviously, is our open week, or depending how our season ends up, December 1st. And once we know a little bit more about where we're headed with that, we'll certainly make that information available.
All right, Shane. So I'm not quite sure what to make of Muschamp's comments here, because basically they've got a month to decide to whether they're going to fill that bye week, or he's basically what he's saying to me is if we're not in contention for the SEC East, maybe we'll slide it in that December game. But what are your thoughts on that?
So just reading the tea leaves, how confident are you that there will be another game scheduled? Not when, just that there will be.
I mean, at this point, I'm not confident at all.
Yeah, that's what I just don't understand. What is to gain? What's to lose here? If what it sounds to me like he's thinking about putting one in if he – doesn't think he's going to win the SEC East. That's the only thing I can guess. Because here's your options. One, you can do it in a bye week. So you guys play, 10 weeks in a row. You don't want to do that deep down inside. And the other one, if they do schedule, it's going to be when?
It'll be probably December 1st while the SEC championship game is going. And it'll be in Columbia. But, like, who in the hell is going to wants to show up, even the most diehard South Carolina fans, being like, well, there's the SEC championship down the road, Georgia and Alabama. Let's go watch, you know, South Carolina beat the hell out of Citadel. You know, like, who in the hell is going to go see that?
Well, exactly. And what Gamecock fan wants them to just concede the East? I mean, they lost a game, yes, to Georgia. Can Georgia lose two games? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, to think that they're going to go undefeated in the SEC is crazy. They do have a great team, but they still got some tough opponents that they got to play. So I would just man up, put a game in the bye week, and move on and say, hey, we're ready. We're still ready to compete for the East. We still want a spot in the SEC championship. Because if they win out, Georgia drops two, and then they reschedule this damn game. I don't know how that works out. It just can't work out. So I don't know. Either man up, do a game, or man up and say, no, we're not going to do it because – It is money. Don't get me wrong, Mike. The university wants money. They want that game there because they're going to make money with that game. But now it sounds to me like they're trying to decide what Georgia's going to do. Almost, that's what it feels like.
Right. Yeah. So that didn't make a whole lot of sense, but he did make Will Muschamp. That is, he made great sense on this one. He was asked about you know, how they kind of coach around the targeting rules about tackling and lowering your helmet and, you know, hitting someone with the crown of your helmet. And I thought this was kind of brilliant. So Muschamp's idea was kind of to go kind of a soccer style yellow card system, red card system. Now he actually did say yellow card, green card. So But I know what he's talking about. He's talking about yellow card, red cards, like in soccer. But here's this clip from Will Muschamp.
You got to lower your targets. Can't lower them too much. They call that too. But you got to keep the crown of the helmet out of all contact. When you're talking in terms of protecting a defenseless player, which a quarterback in the pocket is a defenseless player, or a quarterback that is sliding is a defenseless player. So obviously no head contact, but you got to lower your targets. You got to get the head out of the contact. We talk to our players about it all the time. Now, me and you sitting here having this conversation is a lot different when you're rushing a passer. You finally beat the 330-pounder that's been you've been headbutting against for four quarters, and you got an opportunity for a sack. But you got to remember to keep your head out of it. It's very easy to be critical of a guy that doesn't necessarily get his head out of it. And we talk about it, and we coach it as hard as we can coach it. It's no different than tackling right now. You know, I mean, it's in conversation of just us sitting here talking, it's a really easy conversation. But when you've got a 220-pound running back barreling down on you, lowering his head, and you're telling a guy not to lower his head and have a little bit of crown contact, which that's why you wear a helmet, it's difficult. It's difficult. I think they ought to have, you know, they have in soccer, they have yellow cards and green cards and all that. Well, some of these aren't malicious contact. Kick a guy out of the game if it's a malicious contact. But if it's not a malicious contact, if you want to give him a 15-yard penalty, that's fine. But we're going to kick a guy out of a game because he's tackling a guy on our sideline and the guy weighs 220 pounds and he's barreling down.
All right, Shane, so what do you think on this system? I love it.
I do too, man. Why aren't we doing something? I mean, we've been stuck on this flag situation for a long time, and you know the soccer is got it figured out. I mean, the thing about it is he made a really good point. If you've got one of these big guys going against another 300-pound dude, and you're hitting heads, you're targeting, you're using your head to get past him. And finally, after 10 minutes of butting heads, you break through, and there's the quarterback, and you're going to make the big play. But all of a sudden, you got to think in that split second that I can't tackle him with my head. It's almost impossible, man. I mean, this is something that they've been doing, I mean, a lot of these guys, for 15 years. And just all of a sudden, now they can't tackle with their head. And what I hate about it is if it's personal, because he didn't make a comment, like if it's a red penalty, like they intentionally did it, yes, let's kick him out of the game. But if they did it on accident, right now they're still having the same situation. They're kicked out of a game. And I don't know. I think that this needs to be looked at.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the face mask rule. I don't know why the hell they ever went away from this, but I always – you know, not that I like sit around and like penalties, but the 5-yard face mask and the 15-yard face mask, those are completely mm-hmm. different things. Why they're all 15 now is just like nonsensical to me. If you're trying to make a tackle and a guy lowers his head and you catch his face mask and you take your hand off, that should be a 5-yard penalty. It shouldn't be a 15-yarder. So this is kind of the same deal in a different way, but you know, hopefully some sense prevails and some momentum is gained by this, because targeting is just one of those rules where I understand why it's in the game, but it just seems like every time I'm seeing one of these games, I can't even tell, and I cover this shit for a living, I can't tell what's targeting, what's not, and why these guys getting kicked out of the game if they're just running downfield and then someone lowers their head at the last second. It just doesn't make any sense, because you're not teaching them anything. You're just rejecting mm-hmm. them, you know?
Exactly. You're not setting any type of example. This is a lot of times – it's repetition. This is what they've been doing their entire life. If you've been driving for 15 years on the right side of the road, and then somebody says, you know, all of a sudden we got to start driving on the left side of the road, there's going to be a couple times you pull out of your driveway and you get on the right side of the road, just not thinking it, just because you've always done that for the last 15 years. It's a similar situation here. These guys have been tackling with their head for 10, 15 years, and now all of a sudden we're saying, oh, you can't do that, and then expect them not to do it at all. I mean, and you're talking seconds, Mike. There's times that you get to that line, you don't know the quarterback's there, you pop out, and then there he is. You're just thinking, I've got to make this tackle. You're not thinking about how you need to tackle him.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about, like, you know, ingraining in these guys, you know, the right way to do it and to play, you know, lean towards the safer side of the game. If you're a star defensive player or what have you, and you do get flagged for this, and it is like the yellow card, and you know that if you get another one, you're out, I think that you would be a little bit more cautious. You are significantly less likely to try to get another one because you know you're like on your last strike. And, you know, so I think the method works in that way too.
Yeah, no, that's good. I don't agree with a lot of stuff Muschamp says, but he nailed this one, man.
Okay, jump into another big game involving an SEC team this week. Kentucky is going to host Mississippi State. And, you know, I think Mississippi State is obviously a big favorite in this game. But much like Kentucky was a big underdog against Florida, they can gain a lot of respect in the league by winning this game. And, you know, they don't care that anyone's counting them out. And that's something that Benny Snell noted when he recently spoke with the media just on Kentucky's underdog status and how that drives him every day of his life, all the way going back to high school. So I wanted to play this clip from our boy Benny Snell.
It's installed in me. It's installed in my heart. You know what I'm saying? I love this game so much, and that, like, from coming up to just working so hard, and to me to still be doubted or for me to still come up short, me going to camps and, you know, me not getting MVP or somebody, you know, getting a rating higher than me because, you know, they're going to a bigger school or whatever, and I work my butt off. You know what I'm saying? Things like that just give me extra motivation. So, you know, I always keep things installed inside my head that, you know, I gotta outwork this person, or I gotta set this standard straight because I know what I am and I know what I can do. You know what I'm saying?
All right, Shane, so do you think this underdog role, I mean, it's going to stick with this team forever just on the fact that they're Kentucky football, but how does that help them this week against Mississippi State?
Man, my boy Benny is at it again. The thing I like about Benny is he's used to being the underdog. There's a reason he's playing at the University of Kentucky, and I honestly don't think it's because he loves the school. It's because they're the only ones that gave him the offer that he wanted. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's had this chip on his shoulder that he's not good enough. He doesn't, you know, he wasn't a five-star, and he thinks he should have been. And they shouldn't have beat Florida. They go down there 31 years, they beat Florida. So, yeah, I think it fuels him. I think it fuels this team. And Benny's truly, I mean, he is the true captain of that offense. And what Benny says, the rest of the team is buying in with him. So, to have your team leader come out like this and talk the way Benny does, it just excites me because I could just imagine the unedited version he's saying in the locker room.
Yeah, and much like we touched on with Derek Mason, you know, getting the fans to come out, Benny Snell did not get into that, but I think this is a little bit of a message to the fans too, because I understand why the Kentucky fans even maybe are not buying into Mark Stoops' program until he beat Florida. So now they got that, you know, that's like another hurdle to getting his program back to, or not back, but to new heights, basically. So, you know, they're beating Florida. This is a huge game, night game. Kentucky, when's the last time Kentucky had a big night game? SEC, you know, the only one that I can think of is, you know, Florida at home, and they always disappoint. So they've already surpassed that. So I think this will be a big game, not only for Kentucky, but I think the fans. I think the fans really need to show up and support their team, because they're going to need them if they're going to upset Mississippi State in this one.
Yeah, and that's kind of what Benny talked about. This isn't last year's Kentucky team. This is this year's Kentucky team. This year's Kentucky team's undefeated. And let's get behind this. Let's roll this thing, because they look good. Wilson looked good. Benny's looked good. The Lions look good. Hell, even the defense looked good. So if they could keep that up and have that mentality that they could beat anybody, and Mississippi State comes in dragging, who knows? I mean, this could be an upset.
All right, jump into another SEC East game. Georgia's traveling to Missouri this week for a noon game for some reason. I don't know why it's not a night game, but Kirby Smart met with the media after this Tuesday practice, and he was asked about Drew Locke. Obviously, you know, he was very high on Locke on our last podcast, and he was asked just, you know, if Kirby Smart, if he's faced another quarterback that's similar to him, and he also touched on the last time they went up to Missouri, they nearly lost. It was a one-point game. Georgia barely won it, and if you remember, Jacob Eason threw a touchdown pass, I don't believe it was as time expired, but it was basically with like 20 seconds left on the clock to get that win. So here's Kirby Smart on those two things.
You know, I hate to compare guys like that. I mean, his arm strength, it's Stafford-like. I mean, he's got a Cutler. I mean, those are the guys that I've had to coach against that were elite arm talent like him. He's a really good athlete as well, so it's one of the better ones. It's hard to compare him to somebody because he's a league of his own. I thought, I mean, last year's game, they scored on us. He got really hot for two or three times. I mean, it's a tough place to play. I've played there other times besides 2 years ago. They've got a great environment there. Their fan base is very passionate. But I don't think this game had anything to do with 1 or 2 years ago. Not a lot of the same names and faces are present.
All right, Shane, so what's your main takeaway from Kirby Smart's comments there on Drew Locke and playing in Columbia, Missouri?
Oh, he loves that guy, don't he? I think he wishes he was his quarterback. But I tell you what, man, Drew Locke, I was really down on Missouri. And then I watched the Purdue game, and I don't want to get too sucked in to the Purdue game. But I saw some things in that game that really surprised me. Not just Drew Locke. I thought the receiver, Hall, is that his name?
Yeah, Emmanuel Hall.
It's real shifty. Do you know, I mean, his number's 84, and I'm not saying he looks exactly like him, but you know who he reminds me of?
I hope you're not going to say Randy Moss.
No, Antonio Brown. Oh,
okay.
Smaller, but real, you know, not the fastest guy in the world, but just explosive, twitchy, can make things happen. In fact, he put them in a great spot to win that Purdue game, and he was hurt. So I like this offense. I like what the line has done, keeping the pressure off of them as well. But this is Georgia. Georgia coming to town, it's going to be a different ball game. So I think Kirby's got a few things hidden behind his sleeve here.
Yeah, you know, we've touched on it. Georgia, you know, I still don't think they've been tested through the air against a good team, really. You know, that South Carolina game got out of hand, and, you know, they couldn't stay on the field. They couldn't run the ball. Missouri actually has some very underrated running backs, so I think that's going to be something to watch on Saturday. But, you know, how this team responds to facing Drew Locke, how these defensive backs, that's going to tell us a lot. And don't forget, Missouri's got that student section right behind the bench, so I don't know if that adds another layer to this game, but you know, I think we'll find out. You know, obviously we think Georgia is a legit team. They should own the line of scrimmage, but sometimes if other things don't go their way, they start having some turnovers, Locke gets hot, Missouri can make this a game. And you know, Locke was also met with the media on Tuesday, and he seems very at ease. He's just having a good old time. You know, he came back for his senior year. He could have left. He came back for reasons like this, but he doesn't seem very fazed by anything. He seems to be just in the zone right now. And I think that was a perfect example is what happened at Purdue. If you saw him holding up that Missouri still sucks sign, he goes into where that came from and everything. This is just a really enjoyable clip. So here's a lock on all what happened there.
I'll say this. It was really fun playing at Purdue. They had an awesome fan base there. Student section right by our bench. So it was really fun. I had a blast playing there. And one of the guys in the front row had that sign and asked me if I could sign it for him when we lost. And I went up to him after the game and just asked him if I could still sign it. And when I grabbed it, I just ended up walking off with it. I think I said it after the game. He actually did. He actually waited for us outside the locker room. And he was like, hey, you took my sign. Can we at least take a selfie? And I was like, yeah, man, my bad. It was kind of the heat of the moment. But, yeah, we can take a selfie. It was all fun. I'm glad that he took it lighthearted again, which made it just more of a – I mean, it was a great place to play. I was excited to be able to go there with my – career here. But yeah, that was kind of the story of that. But no, it was really just us trying to change, you know, our mindset from last year. We talk about it was a revenge game going into it. I think if we went into it looking at it as a huge revenge game, people have been really on edge, and I don't think we would have came out with the win. We just went in there saying we gotta play our best, we gotta play our A game, and we think we'll come out with a win every time we do that.
All right, Shane, Missouri still sucks. We thought it too, but I guess we were wrong, along just like all the Purdue fans.
I got you. No, and they didn't. And what was awesome about that is right after the game, I saw him holding his sign, and I was like, "What? I want to see what that is. Is there something that I need to know what that is?" Because I didn't watch the entire game, so I didn't know if something happened at the beginning or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm on Twitter looking for it. So actually, today was the first time I actually found out what it said. And that Purdue guy lost the game, lost his sign, and waited around for a selfie for Drew Lock. So I just thought that was kind of an awesome little story there.
Yeah, and I just think that goes to show just how at ease Drew Lock is heading into this Georgia game. Obviously, a huge test. This, and think about it, this could be a huge moneymaker for him because there's going to be a national audience on this game. This is going to be a game that a lot of NFL evaluators are going to be watching. Now, Missouri also plays Alabama, so I think that'll be one even more. But they're going to be watching tape of Georgia and Alabama and how they handle this guy. So I think he's mm-hmm. got potentially a lot of money on the line this weekend on how he performs.
That's a good point, man. That's a good point.
That's what I do. Okay, so last team we wanted to touch on here, Auburn. Gus Malzahn, he met with the media on Tuesday as well, and he had some notes on his offensive line and Jarrett Stidham. And I've got a kind of a hot take here. I want to play these clips, and then we'll jump into that.
Yeah, but I will say this too. I mean, I think we got to be real with ourselves that I think coming into this season, we had 16 or 17 starts between everybody up front, okay? So, and we played two, what I'd say, really good defenses so far. And so that group will continually improve. They're getting used to working together, and you'll see that group improve. So, you know, I'm encouraged moving forward with that group. Yeah, you know, and I think he will. I mean, you know, he'd like to have a couple of those plays back. But, you know, Jarrett, we have a lot of confidence in him. He'll rebound. He's going to play extremely well. He's one of the best quarterbacks in all of college football. And so, you know, he's our guy, and he'll continue to work hard and practice to improve and get better at the things that he feels, you know, that we feel like he needs to get better, and he feels like he needs to get better.
All right, Shane, so Malzahn's, you know, he's not, you know, he thinks his O-line's going to get better, but he's still got a ton of faith in Jarrett Stidham. Could you call me a dumbass for thinking that Jarrett Stidham is possibly vastly overrated?
No, not at all, man. I mean, there was a lot of people talking about him being exposed late last year, and maybe it's rolling into this year. I don't know. I wouldn't call you a dumbass.
Well, that's good to know. yeah, because I don't know.
Are you? I mean, seriously, what's your feelings on Stidham down there?
Well, just watching back that LSU game, LSU Auburn. I watched it twice now. He really did not have a great game. You know, he threw a couple of really bad interceptions. Now I'm not going to throw him under the bus for just one game, but it just had me thinking. You know, with Kerryon Johnson was kind of limited. And like you said, in the Peach Bowl and against Georgia, he could not carry this thing by himself. Now he's now he doesn't have the offensive line, and we're kind of seeing the same. I didn't think he was particularly sharp in that Washington game. You know, he did have the early touchdown that was pretty solid. So I'm not saying he was garbage by any means, but I don't know. I think he's, you know, a lot of people, when a quarterback comes back, they just seem to project like, oh, he's going to be a first rounder. I don't think this guy's anywhere close to that. I think that's why he did come back, is because he was not getting favorable NFL grades. And now that he doesn't have Kerryon Johnson, who was SEC Offensive Player of the Year last year, he's got a totally rebuilt line. I think I don't know if exposed is the right word, because he's still a good player, but I think I'm starting to see after a couple weeks in the season, I think he's way down the list of, I would even put guys like Te'amu, you know, Jake Fromm, Drew Lock, of course, Tua. I mean, there's a lot of guys. I think Joe Burrow outplayed him. So, I don't know. I think Stidham is kind of trending in the wrong direction here after a couple weeks.
Yeah, maybe that. I mean, trending in the wrong direction. I'm not giving up on him just yet because it's still early in the season. Mm-hmm. A lot of things can happen here. He is missing a couple weapons that he should have back here in the next week or two. So I don't know. I'm not ready to just hang him out to dry just yet. But what I have seen it's not matching anywhere close to the preseason hype that he was getting, for sure.
All right, Shay, so the final note that I have, just wanted to touch on this briefly, because I know my star researcher here, Cousin Shane, he found a pretty cool stat I wanted to share with everybody. But this will be the first Tennessee-Florida game since 1970, which features Tennessee and Florida with new coaches. And back then it was Bill Battle for Tennessee, Doug Dickey for the Gators. Tennessee won that game 38-7. Are you reading anything into that, or just did you think that was just an interesting stat?
No, I just – we talked about yesterday, is this the most important matchup in 10 years? And, you know, we talked about this being the first time that they've had two new coaches, mm-hmm. and maybe that's why they're talking about this being so significant. So I just thought it was funny. We talked about that, and then that stat came out today, and I thought I'd share it with you. So, no, I think it's this huge for Tennessee. I think it's huge for the University of Florida. This is – you know, the early when you have two new teams that are struggling to get back to where they were, mm-hmm. this is a big game because you're also establishing who's the big brother and who's the little one. You know, so
yeah, and I'm looking over the game notes and the stats because it's all included in this tweet that you sent to me, and it's pretty funny. It's everything's handwritten, so it's very antique-y, and this was played October 24th, which is actually my birthday, so I thought that was also cool. The
happy birthday.
The attendance in Neyland was 64,000. That would be a terrible showing for Saturday. Florida had 8 rushing yards in the game. I thought that.
Love it.
And
love it.
They're even mistakes, and they just kind of like cross them out because they're writing it in pencil here. But I don't know. It's great to go down this memory lane here. And I think that's part of what makes the SEC so special is just even going back all the way to 1970, you know, there's people looking up and keeping all these stats and records and everything, and it's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. Now, was that Johnny Majors punting? I don't know if you noticed that.
Majors. I don't know.
Yeah, 5 punts for 161. He also returned 3 punts for 29 yards. So, yeah, these old things, I just – sometimes you can get lost in them, and you really need to look at them because they're obviously what got us where we're at now. History is important, especially in college football. I just love it. I love how the – if you've never watched the development of the SEC, you need to do some research on that because if I throw a team out like Swanee, you wouldn't know who it is unless you know a little bit about the history. But – you know, if you're not doing anything, maybe in the off season, I wouldn't do it during the season, but if you're just itching for a little football in the off season, do a little research on just the league itself. I think it's awesome.
All right, Shane, before we get out of here, you got anything else you want to touch on?
Yeah, buddy, mailbag.
Oh, sweet.
I have got a mailbag question from a Jay Dalton. You can follow him on Twitter at JDDalton04. His question, and he says, make sure Mike answers it, because a lot of times you just leave me hanging. But it says, if you could go back and change one play in college football history, what would it be and why? Now, we're asking this question. I'm also going to post this on the Reddit page. So if you've got an answer, I am curious, because obviously we're from Tennessee, so we're going to be a little bit probably – I don't know what you're going to pick, but I know mine's going to be a little bit Tennessee biased. But if I could change any play, it'd be back in 2001, and it would be the Tennessee-LSU game in the SEC championship. The reason is we obviously that was the year 9/11 happened. Florida game got pushed back to the end of the season. We weren't supposed to win. We went down there. We beat them. Florida was supposed to be going to the SEC championship. Florida was supposed to be going to the national championship. We would go down there. We beat them. I think another team fell. I want to say it was Nebraska, something like that. They were projected, but then they ended up losing. So Tennessee was kind of the front runner to face Miami. They go to LSU. We go down there, and we started out kind of sluggish. I think it was like 17-7, something like that. But we ended up getting back in the game and only down, I think it was 4 points, like 24-20, something like that. Mm-hmm. Casey Clawson threw a pass to Dante Stallworth, and everything was looking great. But then I think it was Ryan Clark or one of the LSU guys stripped the ball, and they recovered it. So after that, they drove all the way back down the field, scored, and kind of put this game away. So if I could change a play, I would have helped Dante hold the ball, and then we probably could have went down and scored because we were definitely picking up the momentum there at the end. And if we did that, we would have had the lead, and who knows, maybe played for another national championship. So that would be the play I would change. What about you, Mark?
Well, before I jump into that, I did want to comment. That does seem to be a popular thing in Tennessee lore about how that game was blown and Tennessee didn't get a shot at the title that year, but Tennessee would have got their ass kicked, man. Do you remember how good Miami – that was like one of the best – literally one of the best teams of all time where, I mean, they had like everyone on their two deep played in the NFL.
Wait a minute. Maybe that was Nebraska that went and played them.
Yeah, and they lost by like 60 points.
Yeah, well, Tennessee would not have won.
Not have beaten that team. it doesn't even matter to me.
But you never know. You never know, man. At least we would have been there. At least we could say we went to a national championship. And who knows? Crazier things have happened, Mike. Upsets happen all the time. And who knows? Fulmer still may be our coach.
All right, one play for me. You know, if I had to change one – you know, I was never even the biggest Peyton Manning fan, to be honest with you. I don't want to bash him or anything, but I thought he was all right. I was more of a Brett Favre man myself. But one play that I thought got way too much attention was old Charles Woodson's punt return against Michigan. He returned the punt, did the stiff arm Heisman, and I think that won him a ton of votes or something because somehow he beat Peyton Manning out for the Heisman and one of the more baffling, you know, voting Heisman votes I've ever seen. I have no idea what in the world they were thinking. I think Charles Woodson had like four interceptions that year. It was crazy. I mean,
right.
Michigan, I think, was the better team, but I don't think he just gave the award to the better team. I don't know. It was like nonsensical to me with Peyton Manning coming back. I think he lost one game in the regular season. That didn't make any sense. So I think I would take that play back.
That's the punt return, right, where he did the Heisman. Or was that an interception? That's a punt return.
I think it was a punt return.
Oh, yeah. No, that's great, man. That's a great one. Yeah, because if they didn't, that's the video they kept showing all year long. So, I just like you said, I think people just saw that video and said, you know what, we never gave it to a defensive back before. So, and gave it to him when Peyton clearly was the best. Now, I heard this happen, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard, you know, they were on the same team there for a little bit, and somebody says that he brought in his Heisman trophy and hung it or put it in the locker, and Peyton came up and put his paycheck stuff and put it in his beside it. So even though he got the Heisman, Peyton got paid. So I just thought, I don't know if that's true or not, but let's just pretend it is because it's awesome.
Well, that's a good one to go out on, Shane. So thanks, everyone, for listening. If you made it this far, please give us a 5-star heart on iTunes and give us a rating while you're there. That would really help us out. Thanks for listening, and thank you, Shane, for joining me as always.
Yeah, buddy. Go Vols. Mike?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
What happened? You just cut out.
Oh, I don't know. I just did the intro, and then I didn't hear you from you again.
You said, welcome to that SEC podcast, and then it went out. I mean, cold silent.
Okay.
You want to try that again?
Sure.
All right.
Welcome in.
And it was a good one.
Eat it.
I was going to say it was a good one, too. Sorry.
All right. Sorry. Someone walked in here.
Oh, you're good.
Okay, now I guess we can leave that.
You get the hell out of here. What now? Sorry, somebody walked in my house.